Kenosha seems to be at the center of the universe, although it is in the southeastern corner of Wisconsin, and all eyes are on it nationwide. It's a little bit uncomfortable, especially considering what's happened and taken place in the streets of Kenosha in the past few weeks. And the question becomes, what can be done with all eyes on us, with the president here earlier this week and the other presidential candidate taken to the streets of Kenosha today? Be specifically interested in folks from Kenosha this morning and how they see their community being seen by the rest of the country. I'm Lee Rayburn. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network, sitting in for Kate Archer Kent one more day. And our guest this, and let me give you the phone number so you can participate throughout the hour at 1-800-642-1234. You can always email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our guests this morning are three leaders of the Kenosha community. They are from the Christian faith, and they're here to help us look at what the community can do and we can do to go forward. Joining us this morning, Reverend Lawrence Kirby II. He's the pastor at the Axe Church of Kenosha. He previously served as a police and fire commissioner of the city, and he's bred for the World Hunger Justice Leader and community leader in Kenosha. Reverend Kirby, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Reverend Monroe Mitchell III is pastor of Agape Love Christian Ministries in Kenosha. Reverend Mitchell, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
And the Reverend Dr. Monica Cummings joins us. She's the assistant minister at Bradford Community Church. Reverend Cummings, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on. Good morning.
Good morning. And I just want to start this morning with each of you talking about your congregations and your community. And Reverend Kirby, I'll start with you. Tell us about the Axe Church of Kenosha.
The Axe Church of Kenosha is a community of faith here in the city. One of our emphases is multi-ethnic church. And so we're in the process of building a church that is multi-ethnic. And so we just believe the gospel is for all people. And so we want a community that reflects what we see in scriptures and even the world around us in terms of diversity.
The scriptures for all people.
Yes.
Reverend Mitchell, tell us about Agape Love Christian Ministries in Kenosha.
Yes, sir. We always like to say that we are a church where everybody's somebody, that Jesus Christ is Lord and Savior. So we put a lot of emphasis, of course, on the gospel of Jesus Christ, as well as multiracial, multicultural ministry. That's rooted and grounded in the Word of God, of course, the love of God, and that's where we get the agape, the name from. We're actively involved in a community. We believe in, we are a scripture-based church as well, and we believe in the importance of scripture, the importance of prayer, and the importance of outreach to even help the community as well.
Reverend Cummings, the Bradford Community Unitarian Universalist Church, tell us about your congregation.
Well, Bradford UU has been around for years and years and years, and it is a predominantly white congregation, multicultural, and in the struggle, in fact, our sign was the sign that kind of went viral with the flames behind it because we share a property line with the car dealership that was destroyed. And so it's a congregation that has wrestled with the question around race, has wrestled with the question around policing for years, and has actually laid the groundwork over the last few years for the congregation to be in the place where it is now, to be able to support the Kenosha community around conversations around race, conversations around where do we go from here.
And Reverend Cummings, your building was damaged by that fire. And what was the feeling, you know, what a church is not a building, but certainly you had to feel as if, you know, the destruction had reached your doorstep. Tell me about the aftermath.
Well, actually, our building only sustained smoke.
Okay.
Damage being so close to the fire. If it weren't for independent journalist CJTV, who saw the flames creeping toward the church and actually emptied our rain barrels to tamp down and then called the fire department, and Kenosha Fire responded immediately. And if it weren't for the actions of CJTV crew and the Kenosha Fire Department, we don't know what would have happened to the building. And as you can imagine, having it come so close, it's grateful that it was saved and only sustained smoke damage and of course the human mind wonders what if.
Reverend Kirby, you served on Kenosha's Police and Fire Commission. Tell us about the relationship in the community with law enforcement.
Sure. Number one, I think we have a fairly solid police department. I mean, when you think about Kenosha PD, it's not the typical kind of hyper-aggressive police department you think of, kind of old-school policing. Now, with that said, there's definitely quite a bit of work that needs to be done in terms of community relations, in terms of issues of what we see as like brutality and those kinds of things. I think in terms of where our department ranks, I would give it about a C+. So it's not a horrible department, but there's definitely work that needs to be done in terms of reform and moving forward and really reconnecting or connecting with African-American communities specifically.
Reverend Mitchell from the Agape Love Christian Ministries in Kenosha, how do you see the relationship with the Kenosha community and its law enforcement?
I agree for the most part with Pastor Kirby said. We've been having a lot of conversations on that in the community as well, but I do think that the police and the community, we need to bridge the gap. We need to open up the channels of communication that much more between the police and between the community as well. And after saying that, I mean, we want to be in a society where, of course, we want to respect the law enforcement, but we also want we do respect the law enforcement, but we want law enforcement to respect the community as well. There shouldn't be a divide where, the community is in fear of the law enforcement and the law enforcement, in retrospect, is in fear of the community. So for the most part, I think on the surface, the relationships are not bad. And if I were to grade it, I'd probably get graded right around in that general area of a C, or C+. So it's not, it's not bad, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Myself, I'm a veteran, and I've taken basically those same, I took the same oath for the most part to serve and protect in the military. But as you serve and protect, you must realize that things are going to change, especially within law enforcement. Different people, different cultures, different ethnicities, people coming from different areas. So it's going to cause for a little bit of a culture change, so to speak. And then also to share with the community a little more about policy and procedures and things of that moving forward.
That's Pastor Mitchell, also joined by Pastor Kirby, Reverend Cummings, all of joining us from Kenosha this morning to take a look at the steps going forward. And your input's welcome as well at 1-800-642-1234, especially if you are from Kenosha. What would you like to see happen in your community next? Daryl and Cooter Ray, you are on the morning show on the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Thank you, Lee. I think all Americans, we the people, need to look into the mirror of reality and ask ourselves two simple questions. By that, I mean you get a mirror or you go into the bathroom and you look into your eyes and you ask yourself two simple questions. First question, when did I get to pick my parents? Second question, when did I get to pick my color?
Daryl, thank you. Something to think about. Before we continue with our guests, Reverend Lawrence Kirby, pastor at the Axe Church of Kenosha, Reverend Monroe Mitchell, pastor of Agape Love Christian Ministries in Kenosha, and the Reverend Dr. Monica Cummings, assistant minister of pastoral care at Bradford Community Unitarian Universalist Church in Kenosha, and you as well at 1-800-642-1234. When you look in the mirror, what do you see? I'm Lee Rayburn. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Armed civilians on the streets of Kenosha? Viral videos that seem to show the Kenosha police thanking them for their service? It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're talking about what's happening in Kenosha and how it's happening across the country. Our guests are three Christian ministers from the city and you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Reverend Lawrence Kirby is a pastor at the Axe Church of Kenosha. Reverend Monroe Mitchell, pastor of Agape Love Christian Ministries in Kenosha. And Reverend Monica Cummings, assistant minister at the Bradford Community Church in Kenosha. All our guests this hour. And you're invited to join as well. And Reverend Cummings, if you wouldn't, take us through the last couple of weeks for people in Kenosha. What has this been like for them, and where are they today?
Well, I can't speak for all of Kenosha, but it's been a painful, it's been a difficult, I guess, 11 days now. And people, as you can imagine, are feeling span the spectrum of feeling. Anger, grief, sorrow, sadness, frustration, confusion, hope. And so it's in shock, you know, shock Sunday night when the video went viral, and then moving through the process of feelings as the protests intensity increased, and until Tuesday night when a 17-year-old crossed state lines, breaking the law, breaking many laws, and killed two people and severely wounded another person, and was able to leave the scene as he was waved by police. And then the ensuing conversations and I think additional trauma on the community. And so to sum up, you know, trauma, you know, Kenosha has experienced the trauma. Citizens of Kenosha, depending on their ethnicity, depending on their socioeconomic, I think experienced that trauma in different ways. And I would say Kenosha now is a city that's fractured, and it's fractured along a fault that's been deep. And I think part of the history here in Kenosha.
Reverend Kirby, your father is a pastor in Racine, correct?
Correct.
And I think he just celebrated, what, his 39th year at St. Paul in Racine. And
that's right.
You talk. So what do you and your dad talk about, Reverend Kirby? Because he's a 50 years, a half century as a minister of faith, 39 years in southeastern Wisconsin. And as Reverend Cummings alludes to, this is not anything new for southeastern Wisconsin. So what's it like with you and your dad talking about what's happening right now?
I mean, we have a lot of great conversations. As you know, my dad has been in the community and we're seeing now for almost 40 years doing ministry, very active in the community, just active civically in a lot of ways. And so I've spent my life kind of having an understanding of a call to serve in the community, to look to your city and ask, how can we be helpful? You know, what can we do in our city to make a difference, not just amongst the members of our congregation? And so our conversations have been geared around those things. Of course, as Reverend Cummings has mentioned, just the trauma of African-American life in this country and how we're impacted by so many different things. So that's really been the bulk of our conversation recently. You know, my dad calls me just about every day. I just check on the city and, more importantly, asking me how am I doing as I'm processing these things and trying to help lead and serve at such a difficult time in our city.
So you grew up in southeastern Wisconsin. I mean, what was your experience with law enforcement, Reverend Kirby?
So it's an interesting dynamic here. I didn't grow up in the inner city. I grew up in Mount Pleasant. So I definitely would say I grew up as a child of privilege in a lot of ways. But the interesting dynamic is that oftentimes when you have interactions with law enforcement, they don't know where you're from. They just know you're Black and of a certain age. And so I've had two or three instances hanging out with friends where we were treated more brutally than what was necessary. And usually what has happened to me in my experience is that, you know, I have somewhat of a negative interaction, and then I run my name, and then my name is Lawrence Kirby, and I say, oh, you're Pastor Kirby's son. And then the tone would change, only because my dad is so well known in the city. And so I think I didn't experience the depths of brutality as other individuals, only because of name recognition and the fact of how well known my dad was in the city.
I want to invite everybody into this conversation about Kenosha because it's much bigger than Kenosha, of course. And the phone number to the studio is 1-800-642-1234. That was Reverend Kirby. Before that, you heard from Reverend Cummings and also Reverend Mitchell joining us this morning, all from Kenosha, all talking about how we can move the community forward. And Reverend Mitchell, I'll ask you, particularly among Black residents in Kenosha, what do they think it's going to take to make things better in the community?
Well, first of all, we believe that it's going to take more conversation, serious conversation. Some of the, I believe Pastor Kirby and Pastor Cummings mentioned it. We've all been talking about this. It's going to take conversations, real conversations about issues such as racism, such as systemic racism, racial divide. You know, this is a key common factor in this community, and not only just now. You know, some of these things that they're not new; they're just rehashing. You know, I always use the metaphor, kind of like a fire, a brush fire, or a fire in the woods. It dies down, it smolders, but it never completely goes out. So, I believe that we're going to definitely need a lot of prayer. We're going to need more unity. We're going to need to have conversations that are not comfortable. You know, and some people when they find out a conversation is going to be about a topic that's not comfortable, they tend to shy away from it or even may act like it doesn't exist or not here. It doesn't exist here. I mean, we've seen these things go on in, you know, Ferguson and Minneapolis and Portland still to this day. So no one's exempt from it. And then Kenosha as well, sitting in between Chicago and Milwaukee. So I say we need those conversations. We truly need to bring about unity, but we need action, not just have these conversations now, but let them continue, you know, for a lifetime, for our youth coming up and our children and grandchildren. And, you know, because we have some kids now. I mean, even my grandson, a couple of days back when the guard was coming through, you know, and he says, well, you know, he's 7 years old. Well, Pawpaw, the army is here. The army is here to shoot people. You know, I sat him down and explained to him, you know, it was very, you know, somewhat traumatic to him. So we need to realize that it's very serious. It's not nothing that's just going to go away. And we need more conversations across the board, across the table with Black, white, Hispanics, community leaders, faith-based leaders, political leaders, you know, the community itself. Don't just try to put it in one certain area or one certain dynamic.
So
Lee, can I add something?
Pastor Cummings, please. Yes.
It's also going to take people educating themselves. Currently, before COVID hit, schools were doing active shooter drills, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so who were the shooters? What ethnicity? Who were the shooters?
I don't know.
White male.
Yeah, most of them have been white males.
In order for the conversation to be able to move forward, people have to ask themselves and educate themselves, why is it if schools are doing active shooter drills and the significant number of the shooters are white males, why is it white males can carry assault-style military weapons and not be stopped and questioned?
And we're talking about on your streets here. We're not talking about somewhere else. We're talking about in your neighborhood.
Yes.
And it happened Tuesday night where 17-year-old mm-hmm. with a white male, 17-year-old with a military-style assault weapon was able to kill two people and severely injure another and be waived by the police because he didn't fit a profile. But a Black man can be shot seven times in the back because he fit a profile. And so I say part of the issue and part of the problem is people need to educate themselves and work through the cognitive dissonance that they have that the judicial system in the United States isn't equal for everyone and educate themselves on why that is and the historical foundation of why that is.
And what we hear.
I agree with my colleagues. Yes. Can I just jump in and make one statement
as
we move on? In American culture, there's a historical narrative that dates back to the 1600s that suggests that Black men are more dangerous than other men. And this exists even beyond policing. And I think one of the challenges is that even as officers put on the badge, they've already embraced this culture that suggests that just black men are more dangerous. And so when you see a black man who is unarmed, there tends to be a heightened alert versus even a white man that has an assault rifle. And so one of the things I think we need to do is shift this narrative in our nation that has existed, again, since its foundations, that black people are more dangerous and aggressive than other people.
Dealing with our own biases, talking about them, and overcoming them. None of this is easy, but all of it is essential. And grateful to have our guests along for the hour, along with you. Pastor Lawrence Kirby is the pastor of the Axe Church of Kenosha. Reverend Monroe Mitchell, pastor of the Agape Love Christian Ministries in Kenosha. And Reverend Monica Cummings, the assistant minister at Bradford Community Church in Kenosha. Our guests for the hour, taking a look at moving Kenosha forward. When we continue, your news is next. I'm Lee Rayburn on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. It's the Ideas Network, and if you haven't noticed yet, I'd like to point out a few changes to our lineup this week. Beginning on Monday, we have new neighbors here on The Morning Show. 1A has moved next door to us, national show hosted by Jen White. She was down in Chicago before that. Now she's nationwide, live, 9 to 11. And I expect many of the same callers we hear here on The Morning Show will also hear on 1A. For those expecting one on point following us today, it has been moved to 1 o'clock during the week, and you can find it following Chapter a Day. Ask you to take a listen and let us know what you think. You can find the details on our website at WPR.org/fall2020. So these problems that we're facing, they loom ancient and large, bigger and older than any one of us. And it makes sense then that believing in something bigger than yourself, even if it is just the humanity of others, provides some path towards healing. We're talking about Kenosha this hour with three leaders from Kenosha's faith community and you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn on The Morning Show, and for Kate Archer Kent, our guest, Reverend Lawrence Kirby, pastor at the Axe Church of Kenosha, Reverend Monroe Mitchell, pastor at Agape Love Christian Ministries, and Reverend Monica Cummings from the Bradford Community Church. It's a Unitarian Universalist church in Kenosha. And from what I'm hearing in the first half hour, I feel as though when we're looking at how to go forward, we can break things into two basic categories, systemic and personal. What can we do to make things better in the systems that we rely on every day as a community? And what can I do as an individual to improve myself in my community every day? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
I'm sorry not for targeting anybody, but I wanted all three of you to say yes in unison before I go forward. Because as you've all talked about your congregations and you've talked about the community of Kenosha, what I hear is congregations of love and hope. And what I hear on the streets is, you know, fear and anger. Monica Cummings, you actually talked to some of these militia members on the night that Kyle Rittenhouse killed two people in the streets and injured one other. What did they say to you?
Well, and I did, because I'm a minister and I see my mission as ministering to everyone. And so they were in the civic park with the protesters. And I just walked up and said, "Hey, guys, how are you?" And I asked if any of them were vets, because I'm a vet myself. And I know another clergy on the line is a vet. Thank you for your service. And they told me they were there to protect property and life if necessary. And because my question was, why would you come to a peaceful protest with military-style assault weapons? And their attitude was, you know, we've got our Second Amendment right to be here, and we're here to protect property and, if necessary, life. And it was a civil conversation. I didn't agree with them. But as they said, they had the right to be there. And I then questioned, where was law enforcement to check to see whether or not they could legally own the weapons they were carrying? And had law enforcement checked whether or not the militia were legally owned their weapons, perhaps they would have, you know, come across a 17-year-old who was not legally to carry or own the weapon he had.
Could have saved two lives is what you're saying.
That's true.
Possibly, and I'm a gun owner myself. I believe in the Second Amendment. I am a gun owner. But I think, like, you know, so many people say, own weapons legally. And had law enforcement stepped in and done any type of ID check, perhaps two lives could have been saved that night.
Well, one of the cases made on behalf of the Kenosha Police Department following the shooting of Jacob Blake is that he was wanted by law enforcement, that there was a warrant out for his arrest, that he was avoiding arrest. And so when we talk about systemic solutions and moving the ball forward here, I don't know who wants to address this, but are we talking about standard operating procedure for police? Do we need to change the way, not just the biases of individuals, but the way the system is told dictates how these individuals should interact when, say, there is a question of a warrant or there is a question of arrest or apprehension? How much of this has to do with the how-to among law enforcement? And I don't know who's best to answer.
To answer that question, please. You know, I don't think there's an argument about Jacob Blake maybe needing to be arrested because of there was a warrant and those kinds of things. So the debate or the outrage is not about him being arrested or interacting with law enforcement at all. Looking at the information that came forward after the shooting about, you know, an active warrant and those kinds of things, I don't think there's any protest about him being arrested. The protest is about the brutality and even the breakdown of procedure. At the very least, we witnessed the breakdown of arrest procedure from the officer, because if you watch the video, you see Jacob, his back to the officer, walking away, and for the officer to follow him with a firearm, it, at the very least, it's a breakdown in police procedure. I don't think the issue is that, hey, they should have just left him alone completely. I mean, of course not. If any citizen has an active warrant and then you have police contact, there's a call. Of course, there's a process that follows. Our outrage is about the degree of brutality against the person whose back was turned to the police.
And my question is that degree of brutality to some degree part of the standard operating procedure that needs to be addressed as part of the solutions to move the ball forward here?
And if I may jump in, yeah. I agree with my colleagues, of course. That's what I mentioned earlier about the policy and the procedure. And, you know, like Pastor Kirby stated, we've all seen the video. We saw not only where his back was turned to law enforcement, and we know they have a job to do. If me or any of us on this call have a warrant on us, they're going to come and get us and they're going to arrest us. We get that. We understand that. That's the policy and the procedure. But not only following him to the degree, but seven shots in the back. It's not extreme. It's over extreme. So making an arrest is one thing. And moving forward, I know that we definitely need to get to the polls and need to remind people how important your vote is. Education is needed. Conversations are needed. But we need to definitely vote so we can, you know, come together and implement a change in a lot of these different laws and legislation and so forth. Things are changing. Not saying that you want to let, you know, people commit crimes and get away with it. I back the badge as well. I mean, I believe in law enforcement. I believe in police and so forth. We need that. I'm not anti-police, but anti-police brutality. The brutality of what happened to this young man was not only unnecessary, but very traumatic. And when we think about how traumatic it is on his children witnessing, you can see, I believe, the daughter was screaming and yelling. Imagine how that's going to affect her for the rest of her life.
That's Pastor
Man. Reverend
Cummings.
I'll add to that. I don't think they were aware that there was a warrant out for him when the encounter started. And so for whoever threw that in there, it's just a distraction. And I think there's a lot of distractions going on. And I'll add to the trauma part. So the police are traumatized with their job. First responders, a lot of trauma. Yeah. I think there's a high suicide rate for police officers. Mm-hmm. And so you have police officers who are, who have PTSD more mm-hmm. than likely. You layer onto that social conditioning around race, where they see black people as threats. You add in a black man who trauma is passed down in the black community from generation to generation, and it starts when we were stolen from the continent of Africa and brought to this continent. So we have historical generational trauma. So what's going to happen when trauma meets trauma on the street and one of the people has a gun and the authority to use it? And so it's education, it's mental health support, yeah, not only for first responders and police, but it's mental health support for the oppressed in this country who don't have the resources to go to therapy or to take meditation or yoga or other things that will help to start healing the trauma. So it is so multi-layered in terms of what needs to happen. And I think foremost, I think our first responders need to get the mental health support that they need so their trauma isn't being triggered when they're on the job.
Do you have trauma on both sides?
Let me add
yeah,
one
Pastor
thing.
Kirby.
One thing KPD does have is a full-time mental health officer, which I think is helpful. I think it's a good beginning and a first step. But it's helpful in helping officers process their own mental health and trauma as well. And I want to say we're one of the only departments in the state that has a full-time sworn officer that is dedicated to mental health issues and officers. And I think we need more of that in PDs across the country. Another thing I want to add is that I think we need to dissect training and the academy programs.
Yes.
I think our officers go into the job under-trained. When you look at the way military is trained, I mean, even a cosmetologist has to spend more time in school than officers in the academy. And so when you look at the amount of time dedicated, I think we need to go back to the drawing board in terms of the police academies across the country and how we really prepare officers to make split-second decisions on the street.
It's the relationship between the community and law enforcement. And again, this is nothing new, but at a certain point, you'd figure something has to change. And the only question is, which way is it going to change? What are we going to do? And how are we going to move the ball forward? And when it comes to individual improvement, Pastor Mitchell, what does it mean to be an ally? And what does it mean for someone like me to make a difference?
Well, I think what you're doing now, sir, is obviously adding to the solution. And, you know, we hear so much about the problems. And, you know, we understand you got to deal with the problems. But seeking out solutions, having these conversations, what you're talking about now, and as my colleague stated, Reverend Cummings, you know, educating people. Some are listening now. Some are getting, tuning in now and getting somewhat, education. So being allies, being friends, helping to get the word out, helping to have a platform for these conversations, involving people from all walks of life, understanding the law, putting the law out there. When we talk about Kyle Rittenhouse, if I pronounce it correctly, not only was he a young Caucasian male, he was 17. And if I'm not mistaken, Wisconsin laws state that you must be 18 to have an open carry permit for a long rifle.
Pastor Mitchell, I got to hold you there because we've got a break coming up, but we're going to go all the way till 9 this morning along with you at 1-800-642-1234. Moving the ball forward in Kenosha and across the country on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. American racism was literally redlined into southeastern Wisconsin. It's part of what we're having to deal with now. Residents across the rest of the state seeing southeastern Wisconsin as something other than a part of this state is also what we're dealing with this hour. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and so grateful to have our guests and you for choosing to participate in this process and finding a way forward. It's Wisconsin, after all. 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Want to thank Reverend Lawrence Kirby, pastor of the Axe Church of Kenosha, Reverend Monroe Mitchell, pastor of the Agape Love Christian Ministries, and Reverend Monica Cummings, assistant minister of pastoral care at Bradford Community Church, all from Kenosha this morning, taking the time with us. And Mary from Pewaukee called but couldn't stay with us. She wishes the media would stop using the name of the 17-year-old shooter because it will only make him famous, which won't help. And maybe there's I don't know. Is it more important to remember the names or the experience, or does that matter?
Well, as I was stating before the break, sir, that, you know, with the laws and so forth, and if they want, you know, I don't know if it's okay, but yeah, he is a 17-year-old minor, but I've heard from confident, you know, sources and reliable sources that he is housed, you know, being housed as a minor, but will be, you know, persecuted in Wisconsin as an adult. So nevertheless, whether it's John Doe or whoever it may be, it'll all be coming to the forefront real soon anyway. But when you were talking about being allies and so forth, what you're doing now, social media, you know, putting the word out, letting people know, you know, Dr. Cummins mentioned earlier, you know, get away from this negative narrative and this negative stigma and talking about we're not animals. We love. Black people love. We eat. When we look in the mirror, we see greatness. We see children of God. We bleed red like any other human being. So don't fear us. You know, don't be afraid to come out to these town hall meetings to listen to us, you know, to bring forth some ideals and to add to the solution, because we need that. Law enforcement, you know, everybody that, you know, they're all people. They all have jobs to do. We understand that. They want to go home to their families, too. But we want to make sure that we have law and order, as they say and as their cars say. You know, we voted them in. I mean, we're not, I'm sorry, we're law-abiding citizens. We pay taxes, and our taxes pay them to serve and protect the whole community, not just some of us.
Pastor Mitchell.
And Lee, to answer your question,
Pastor Kirby.
I think anonymity can become dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that names tell stories. And so as unfortunate and tragic as the stories that are unfolding are, the names associated with individuals make it a person. It makes it personal. So I understand the issue of infamy or fame, but also understand that stories bring a humanity, or names bring a humanity, as we read these stories and as we watch these things unfold.
Pastor Cummins?
Well, and I'll just add, in terms of your question, how to become an ally. Back in 2018, Bradford Community Church Unitarian Universalist voted to put a Black Lives Matter banner up on the church, and it was defeated. And some people left the church because they didn't think, you know, enough was being done, and others left the church for other reasons. And the congregation stayed at the table and put the Black Lives Matter banner up 6 weeks ago on the sign that consequently was burned down along with the car dealership. And so how do we move forward? How do you become an ally? Staying in the tough conversations, educating yourself. You know, there's a fantastic book out there, How to Be an Anti-Racist. It's going to be hard. It's looking at social conditioning, cultural conditioning, and understanding the historic foundation of how we got where we are in terms of race relations.
Which gives me faith, Pastor Cummins, but that gives me faith in the opportunity for individuals to improve. Going back to the systems and you know, standard operating procedures and law enforcement training.
It's personal responsibility and public policy.
Yeah.
So once people do the education and understand the systems at play and the role that they have, then they can look at public policy and say, that's not fair. They can look at public policy and put pressure on politicians to pass legislation, to pass policy that will hold officers accountable when they use excessive force as opposed to not. And so it's a combination. It's personal responsibility and public policy.
But Pastor Cummins, you make a case.
Things,
hold on. Let me make
this
case here, and I'll get right to
sure,
you, Pastor Mitchell. But I just want to point out that it is the way it sounds as though we're not going to get systemic changes, or we're not going to find systemic improvements until we get personal improvements. We can't actually change the system until we can get enough people to change themselves and identify the priority here of a statement as simple as Black Lives Matter. Pastor Mitchell?
Pastor Kirby.
Pastor Kirby.
Yeah. I do want to add that I believe our white brothers and sisters have to go beyond being allies. I think we have to begin to see these issues as human rights issues, because one of my fears is I don't want the narrative to be that these are black problems. And so our white brothers and sisters have to support black problems. The governor of California made a statement a couple months ago, and what he said essentially was that white people created a culture of racism in America, and it's up to white people to help take the lead to dismantle that culture. And so as you educate and as we come together and understand the narrative better, I think there's a responsibility and an obligation for not just black and brown people to advocate and tell their stories, before our white brothers and sisters well to actively pursue justice and understand these systems and cultures that were created in our country generations ago.
Pastor Mitchell, we've spent an hour talking about moving forward as a community in Kenosha. Nobody's mentioned defund the police or abolish the police. It's about relationships in the community with all these institutions. Do you find that other community leaders outside communities of faith are doing the work that's going to be needed in Kenosha?
Yes, I agree. There's some other agencies, I mean, mental health agencies and, some other nonprofits that are doing some as well. They may lead differently, think a little bit differently. And yes, we've heard the conversation of defunding of the police, which I don't look at, and I'm sure most of us is not like taking their salary and so forth, but just using some of those funds, which can be very helpful, to put forth more into mental health support, having other people involved with police, being on site sometimes when they go to a hostile environment, domestic violence, and things of that nature. Some of the people they get called for, they could be dealing with mental health issues like bipolar, depression, schizophrenia, and so forth, and you need a mental health expert or, a specialist there to be able to diagnose and to be able to help treat the problem and de-escalate the problem instead of just, sometimes going at it aggressively and physically, and no disrespect towards law enforcement because maybe they don't have that training in that area, and that's understandable.
We've heard that from law enforcement, haven't we? That law enforcement isn't trained for such things. We have these institutions like our schools where, they've continued to expand services because the community needs those services like, lunches and food. And we've expanded law enforcement because we need those services like mental health intervention. But this isn't necessarily what these institutions are for. So maybe perhaps part of the solution is looking at other institution availability, but would that be defund the police? And I'm sorry, we're running out of time here. Mm-hmm. Pastor Cummings, how do you see it?
I think Pastor Kirby mentioned reform. It goes back to the academy. What needs to be added in training, additional training for police officers, continuous training, and making it a priority, and adding, like some has been mentioned, having counselors, a PET team, an active PET team that can be deployed anytime officers come across someone who they think may have a mental illness. So it's complex. It's a complex issue, and it stems in the historical context of how race relations developed in this country. And again, it's back to personal responsibility and public policy. They have to go hand in hand.
Pastor Monica Cummings, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Maybe extend their training a little longer.
Yeah, Pastor, we're out of time. Pastor Monroe Mitchell, thank you so much for your time and wisdom this morning as well. And Pastor Lawrence Kirby, it is a pleasure to have all three of you joining us this morning from Kenosha to take a look at where we go forward as a community. Thank you for being a part of the conversation. I'm Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Kate Archer Kent. And just ahead on 1A, Jen White takes a good look at our collective compulsion towards productivity and asks if we're putting all of our efforts in all the wrong places. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.